Good morning, everyone. So what shall we look at today? Star 6 to unmute.
This is Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Hey. So it's a crazy world out there now, and and things have changed a lot, and in terms of schedules and routines and school closing and social distancing and all that, and actually what drops in as I say that is that actually nothing has changed, because all I'm doing is practice and seeing how I struggle or how suffering is caused, and to practice doing that under, you know, quote, supposedly new circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's such a contradiction, right, Michael? I think that's what you're pointing us to, that there's what we do is practice regardless of what the circumstances are. And sometimes when the circumstances are very, very different from our normal circumstances, we bring attention to the fact that it seems very, very different. But what we can do is to bring that level of attention and awareness and presence to it all. Just see how suffering happens for us and keep doing what we do.
Yes, yes. And I had an RLB call a couple days ago. And, what I was noticing is that, you know, I don't feel particularly stressed or put off by or overwhelmed by these changes, you know, out in the world and work routines and school routines. And, I mean, maybe that'll change. But I credit practice with providing sort of a framework for me to go around in the world and to interact and participate with things always changing all the time. I mean, I guess they're more dramatic changes now, but the principle is the same, is that I'm here to be present. I'm here to participate. I want to make a, you know, quote, positive contribution. And so none of that is any different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think what you're saying, right, Michael, is that when we as awareness practitioners, we are process people, right? So our process is being present to present and paying attention and expanding awareness and being here and seeing how things happen. And so the process of how we are doesn't alter if circumstances change. But that doesn't mean that we don't notice the change in circumstance or the difference in circumstance, or if necessary, adjustment to those changing circumstances. And there's a way in which you recognize that if you have a process perspective, then there's not necessarily stress, because the stress comes from wanting it to be different than it is, or feeling overwhelmed or overburdened by shifting circumstances, which only comes from your well-being being conditional, right? So if you're practicing to have attention on awareness and well-being being unconditional, then all we get to do in dramatically different circumstances is to see how that work, how I am with dramatically different circumstances, right? Not that my well-being is conditional on it.
Yes, yes. It's like life has shifted to such a degree that it gives me a kind of a radically different lens to look at life, to look at my process. And in many ways, you know, I can look for opportunities. Okay, you know, what is new and different? What is opening now that was not opening before? And so in that sense, it's, you know, fun and exciting and calls me to presence, even when the news can be rather depressing and dismal.
That if I'm tracking what you're saying, if the attention is on that orientation where everything is going to teach me something, and now I have a dramatically different way of looking at how I am in circumstances that are different, then there's a curiosity, there's a fascination, there's an openness, and that's the process I'm in. So I don't get depressed if the news is dismal because my attention is not on content. My attention is on the process of becoming aware with whatever the circumstances is. And I would project that it's the judgment of how it is comes from a very different place than having attention on a process of curiosity.
Yeah. And
Sherry said something to me this morning. It's like there's a sobriety, that there's a sense of soberness at what's happening. And as you started out with, that sense of what's happening is always the same. You know, greed, hate, and delusion is alive and well, and the consequences of that we're facing all the time, and sometimes it's more dramatic than other times. But there is a way in which we practice with all of it, and that practice gives us a sense of succor, I think, a groundedness that doesn't allow us to feel the undulations that much.
Yes. And the last thing I'll say is, especially in this time, is the bountiful virtual opportunities that we have to practice, including this one right now. And, you know, what a blessing that is when the circumstances are such that it is much harder to be together in person.
So, such gratitude for the technology that makes this possible. And I can't wait for us all to get back on the radio show tomorrow morning and start off away by all of us, you know, enduring this time, have a touch point to choose what we want to focus our attention on and stay in that place you're pointing to, from which it's possible to be with all that is.
Yes.
Rather than get carried away by it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
This is Jan.
Laura.
Jan and then Laura.
Hi. Just on continuing off of what you were just talking, what you and Michael were just exchanging, that what's striking me about this time is the not knowing and not being in control. And those two things.
Not knowing. I think that you blipped out there, Jan. I think you said not knowing and not being in control.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's those things that seem to be causing a lot of suffering for many folks. And I can see myself at times being pulled toward, you know, there's something wrong with that. And yet, as you and Michael pointed out, the practice is allowing me to see again and again that we never know and we don't have control. And so in that sense, nothing is different. It's just a more extreme external content environment, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, it brings us really, and you know, you often wonder why we have these, because on a normal level, we always talk about not being in control and not knowing, right? So there's a level at which we practice with that, and then the external gets escalated to really bring us in touch with not knowing and not having control and how we are with that. And we can watch, right? We can watch for ourselves the thing that it reminds me of, right, Jan, is as you move through the ranks in any sport, right, there's a certain league and you develop a comfort with playing in that league and being mastering skills in that league. And then you move up a league and now you're required to face a challenge, that a level of challenge to your skill that hasn't previously been faced. And so that's what we're going with this time, right? That's at a certain level, I know I don't know, and I know that I'm not in control. But there's a familiarity with how I've practiced with it that is a level of stasis. And now, you know, the level increases and I get to see how I'm with that. And I get to see how I'm with that as well as with people who are not practicing perhaps and who get carried away with that. How am I with having to be around people that don't have a framework around not knowing and have immense amounts of suffering around that? Because we do get impacted, yeah. Right?
Yeah, I guess social distancing helps with that, doesn't it? we're not around folks that much, but
we still get it through all the media, right? That there's a way in which the information coming in is something that we can have a choice around distancing, right? But that line between staying informed and being caught in the vortex of the panic.
Yes, and I guess I don't want to say I'm enjoying it, but I guess practice leads me to be very close to that. That, you know, personal circumstance. We have a family member who has just lost all work for the next couple of months because of the circumstance, and we have a family wedding. Then is that going to happen? And we could go sort of hysterical with that, or be panicked or go into worry. And to me, it's sort of a miracle that that's not where I'm going. That's not where we're going. And that I actually can see the possibility when I stay present, that the possibility of creativity in these circumstances is available. I don't know what that is in any moment, but I know it's there, and that lightens everything. It changes it all.
Well, and I think that's the wonder of it, right, John? Because part of I don't know if this is what you're pointing to, but this is what I saw in what you said. These circumstances are supposed to produce hysteria and negativity and fear. But what practice allows us to do is to see that we don't have to go to those places. Those are conditioned reactions that we no longer tend to have. And so if I'm here, and I'm here and centered, and I won't let the attention be dragged away to that place, then there's an opportunity for me to be present for the next step, not be attached to outcome.
Okay. Yes.
Hang on, Jan. I think there's a lot of static on the line. Jan, could you unmute yourself? Jan? Jan, could you unmute yourself?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, you can hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
just that place of being sufficiently centered to know that there's an option that's not that reaction.
Yes. And one of the last things that's dropping in for me is I've also noticed, and this is, I guess I'm appreciating it right now. I may not have appreciated it when I first experienced it, but it's physical sensations of losing control. And I don't even know how to describe it, but it's almost as if there had been a gigantic earthquake and everything I thought that existed no longer exists. All the beliefs, the physical structures, everything has changed. And I notice the physical sensations of that. That's all the best I can do to describe it. And now, this morning, in this conversation, I'm appreciating that I could even see that and not have to believe that it means anything. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't know if this is what you're pointing to, but there's a way in which we actually experience all dimensions of what it means not to be in control, right? Because as you're pointing to, the beliefs and assumptions and structures and things that we automatically reference as going to be there when I reference it doesn't exist. It's a really disorienting feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that disorientation and yeah. watching the physical sensations that go with that. But thanks to practice, knowing that that doesn't necessarily mean anything. And
yeah,
just appreciating it all. So thank you.
There's nothing wrong with it. That's really what we come to, that often the reality that we're so practicing so hard to recognize as made up, suddenly we realize is, and now we've got to find ourselves in that space, right?
Yes, yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Laura.
Okay, it's Carol.
And then Carol. Laura.
Can you hear me?
Yes, can hear you.
Yeah, I'd say I'm having the workshop of not quite getting to the place of everything of it not being wrong.
Yes. Well, we are all in that workshop, right, Laura? That we get to experience whatever it is.
Yes. Yeah.
Say more.
Yeah, I'm definitely dealing with disorientation, and I think the loss of control too. Sort of what my next few months was going to look like is all of a sudden very different and unknown.
And we don't even know if it's the next few months, right? There's just no ability to speculate how long this is going to go and whether it's another week or two or several months. It's just, truly uncertainty.
And I think uncertainty about people I care about who are vulnerable to this.
Yeah, that's hard, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, it's not like there wasn't vulnerability before, but it's just very, in your face and amplified, as you say, by all the media and
Well, and it is true, right, Laura? There is, there's a way we say in practice that there's nothing wrong with everything, but there's also a registering of change in circumstances. And as you're saying, we didn't have a virus before, right? That the virus exists now does mean that certain people are more vulnerable than other people. And that certain people are facing economic difficulty and all kinds of things that are consequences of a change in external circumstances. And so it's not all good, within quotes. Our response to that may be different, but we don't want to miss the facticity of the environment. So yeah, it is. There are certain people who are really vulnerable, and they're people you care about. And so how you are with that fear and with that potential loss and what happens to those people is what you're having to grapple with, and it's not fun.
And it's not wrong
that it isn't fun, right, Laura? It's just how it is.
Just on this call, it's been dropping. Like I had a coworker who was diagnosed with cancer last year, and he passed away about a month ago. I'm just noticing that it's like this process feels very similar to what I went through, kind of with that, because seeing him go through that and. It was just such a clear indication of, like, we do not have control. All the people who cared about him did not have control. He did not have control, and,
Yeah. Well, and I project that when you say you're going through the same process it's not just about control. It's about facing painful places for you, right? The facing the fact that there isn't control, facing the fact that one loses people we love, and that we go through grief and loss and pain, and that's very much a part of existence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That we can't avoid that, you know?
Yeah.
And when we face it, there's a way in which there's some level of grace that we experience through it, if only that there's a way in which you can actually go through it, no? And in it, you increase your chances of going through it with love rather than with nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been helpful. Like in 200 recordings, like, it's come up. It's just like, I think the mentor sort of just acknowledging, like, you're having this transition, you're having this change, you're having a process, you're having this thing that, you know, is not going to be happening, or, you know, and sort of acknowledging. And the insert, you know, it's like acknowledging all that and just being like, no standards, you know, like, it's okay however you're feeling, it's okay whatever you're doing, you know. It's
absolutely. It's a level of unconditional love and acceptance, right? It doesn't, it seems to me that if nothing else, is the opportunity in the moment, which is whatever's happening, there's a tremendous level of you're okay that it's happening, and the way you're experiencing that is okay. And that's a loving place.
Yeah.
Because it would be awful, awful otherwise, right, Laura? It really would be. We would be just tumbled by circumstances without any ability to assist ourselves in processing what's going on for us.
Yeah. I'm very grateful for our practice and grateful just, like you, I'm very, very much looking forward to having a daily touchstone of the year-long retreat. That'll be really helpful.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Carol.
Hi, this is Carol in San Francisco.
Hello.
Hello. I'm just really grateful that this is available this morning. And I feel like I'm going back and forth, kind of getting bounced. I think my process right now is duality. I'm looking at the idea of being, I don't want to get the virus and be sequestered in an in-law unit for 14 days. That freaks me out. So I feel like that mentor just goes, okay, well, just make a lot of recordings and you'll have a lot of stuff to listen to, and it'll be a great time. So if that happens, I feel like there's some plan.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting, right, Carol, when we watch that process. It's the worst thing in the world to be by yourself for 14 days. And so we don't know that. We don't know we can't be we won't have the best time with ourselves for 14 days, but it's a sort of statement that we don't question and just believe that being sequestered in a little space for 14 days is going to make us crazy, right? We don't know that. I mean, I'm here trying to go from moment to moment and not get freaked out, right? Yeah.
Exactly, and it seems like things really shift from moment to moment, not only just with the news, but inside, everybody's having the toilet paper rush, you know, the big panic buying and stuff. I went into a store Friday night and, you know, pretty much not too much is on the shelves, and there were 45-minute lines, and I started to feel panic, like everybody knows something. There's never going to be any more toilet paper again in the world. And I, you know, had to restrain myself, you know, and just go, no, just buy. Well, I felt like I wanted to hoard too, you know, I saw those people doing the rush in the toilet paper lines on TV, you know, like having fights and stuff. And I thought, kind of critical, but I thought I could be there too in a minute. If I'd been in that store, I might've been rushing for toilet paper too.
It's a compassion, right, Carol? Because we can see in ourselves that place of fear that is operating in everybody. Because if we were all sort of centered, you'd go and buy the toilet paper for the week that you needed, right? Instead of going to that place of, oh my God, the world is coming to an end. But we can see how when we are in the grip of that conditioned process, in the grip of that separation, that we're not operating from a place of what's best for all or what's compassionate for all. And we know that place in ourselves.
Yeah, that's so important sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, it's so important to remember. I know that feeling because I'm there myself any moment.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And
yes.
So there's really nothing to judge because I can go into panic and do things I'm taken over and do like those kind of things. And that really helps, you know?
Yes. Well, and that you have a practice and a recorder that maybe you're in line and maybe you're joining the line. But there's a way in which when you watch it and you see that that's fear in other people and that you don't go to those places of fear, you become that node of intelligence that's grounded and centered and is not contributing to that panic, right?
Yeah,
because if everybody
right.
did that,
exactly.
then there would be a real problem. But there are some people whose practice assists them to be that social relief, to hold bigger picture, to not go to places of fear and act out from that place.
Yeah, that's a really good point because like conditioning would say, oh, don't go into fear, just go into repression. But
yeah.
But there's this middle way that you're talking about where you could just go, okay, this is happening. Sometimes I'm getting identified and sometimes I'm out of it. But I'm here now and watching and breathing. And that's a way to be in the middle way, which then brings a little bit of presence and peace in that store or in that line, you know.
Yes, and when you're sitting there being told that you're going to have to self-quarantine and freak out, right? that there's a way in which you can breathe, you can bring your attention back to the moment and be present in this moment and feel like you could trust something. You could trust something other than that conditioned process. And,
exactly.
that going through disappeared for me when you were talking about it, right? The choice that conditioning offers is either go to the extreme of fear or go to the state of repression. But as we were talking with Laura, there's a way in which you want to be present to what's your experience. So in the environment, terrible things are happening. And there's a way in which you get to see how you are when you face that with conditioning and how to bring yourself to a place of acceptance with the conditioned reaction, with the circumstance, and with yourself. It's a process, right? So we don't want to deny what's happening out there, what's happening in here. And that's our practice. We just bring awareness to it all, not change how we are.
Yeah. And the thing that conditioning doesn't say is, hey, I'm all right right now. There's plenty of food. There's plenty of resources.
That's right.
Nothing, you know, I mean, I'm working with a lot of people that are very likely candidates for this, but it hasn't happened yet, and we'll just show up, you know. And really,
exactly.
It's okay right now.
Yes, and take the precautions I can take and make sure that I stay here for intelligence to inform me what the next best step is. Because if I'm lost in that panic, what goes out of the window is anything wise, anything intelligent, anything appropriate to the moment.
Yes, that's so great. Just be here and let intelligence inform what the next step is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Good. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks, Carol.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Margaret? Ms.
Margaret?
Autumn.
And Autumn. Margaret and then Autumn.
Hi. I'm so glad to be able to join Sangha.
Yes, on a
Sunday, and to be here, and I've been going through quite a lot of the same things that
other people have been sharing about, and it's just so helpful, you know, to realize that there's so many tools in practice.
Sorry, folks, if there's somebody who's not Margaret that's not muted, would you mute yourself? There's a lot of static on the line. Go ahead, Margaret.
Yeah. The practice, it's just becoming so clear to me that the practice tools are available moment by moment as I'm here to use them when I'm present. To use them and to end that suffering that shows up about, because it seems like there's many, depending on what I'm paying attention to in the world of suffering around this the viral issue and other things related to that, it seems so clear that I now have these tools of, you know, just coming back to the present moment. And realizing that this is really that presence and the completeness of that presence is not mm-hmm. suffering.
Yes. Yes, that if we are here, then we have the tools that assist us to stay here. And if we're not here, then there's the ability to use those tools to come back to here. And here is not a place of suffering, because no matter, I think we're circling this with everybody today, this morning, which is there's a way to be with something, however terrible it is, and not suffer over it, if I'm present to it as it is, rather than involved in a conversation about it.
Right. Yes, and I've been having just these experiences of, you know, genuine love and compassion for people. I haven't gone out really to very many places that weren't, you know, essential, like the grocery store. And just there, having compassion for the people who work there, who are trying to, you know, just tell me that there's no zinc left. I'm sorry, we haven't had it for 2 weeks, and all we mm-hmm. have are the, you know, things like that. And that just happened yesterday, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll figure out, there's something else that I can use or something. But just having compassion, seeing, oh, you know, these people are coming to work every day, and I don't have to. I can mm-hmm. be at home, and, you know, I have such a privilege in that. Mm-hmm. And yet I see that when I do go out and experience this amazing sense of my connection with people that are in more difficult circumstances, I mean, if you could call it that, where they mm-hmm. have to go to work and they deal with the public, and I guess I will, if I want to renew my driver's license in the next 2 weeks, I'm going to have to mm-hmm. go.
Yeah,
that sort of thing. But I feel so grateful for practice and that refuge
mm-hmm.
of the
yeah.
present moment.
Yeah, the refuge of the present moment and just gratitude. And that,
yeah.
right, yes, Margaret. Because what I think you're pointing to is we're all connected in some way. And some of us have the great privilege of not being able to have to do other people what other people have to do. And we acknowledge how all of these different ways of being, and yeah, there's a load of compassion for people who have to get to work even and expose themselves to this to the virus when you don't have to. And that there's a way in which you can be with them when they say, you know what, the thing you're looking for is not available. Instead of getting upset and instead of getting irritated, there's a way in which you bring compassion to that situation and say, okay, well, I'll have to go look for something else. And that's what we do, right? That's the refuge of the present moment, that we're able to receive the information just as it is and be with it and then look to life for what now? That's the peace of the moment.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, thank you for reflecting so much, because it's, I can see that I just really want everyone to have that compassion.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, we're not in control of that, right, Margaret?
No, I know, mm-hmm. but it seems like it's possible for me to be there. You know that phrase of that Sherry said, or and others have said, of this too, you know,
yes.
more in the sense of something really, really bad that I have to face, you know, now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's been coming up for me, just because I think conditioning wants me to say, you know, you're not going to be able to say that. You're not going to be at center for something like that. And I just don't think that's true anymore.
Uh-huh.
I know I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Let me see if I'm following that, Margaret, that this too is sort of surrendering to whatever it is, however, the terribleness of it, if you can say it that way. And that what you're being told is that for the worst that you have to face, you will not be able to face it from a centered place. And you're seeing the lie in that, that that's no longer true for you, that you don't believe you can't face it. You just don't know. And you'll find out when that happens. And you don't have to listen to a conversation that says you need to be afraid of it or avoid it or whatever else, because your practice is whatever it is, this is this too. So if this is what I'm facing now, then when whatever it is comes up, I'll be facing that now. And I'll know whether I can or cannot. I just don't have to waste any time listening to a voice in my head telling me that I won't be able to do that.
Right, right.
It's such freedom, isn't it? We don't have to
it is.
In any moment except this one.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Ashwini. It's good to have you back, and me to be back.
Yes, thank you, Margaret. I'm glad to be back.
Thank you.
And not stuck in some airport somewhere.
Yes.
Autumn. Hello? Autumn? It's *6 to unmute.
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay. So I'm here, and what I'm noticing is, you know, I'm noticing a lot of similar themes for me in that there's this immense sense of gratitude. What's interesting about it is, you know, a week ago or so, there was some sort of insecurity and uncertainty and irritation about how this was going to inconvenience me and how much, you know, money I was going to lose and work I was going to lose. And my focus was kind of, it was just a little bit more narrow, and I didn't really have a understanding or a grasp on what was going on. And what I noticed is how over the course of the last week that my awareness and my understanding and my compassion and everything has just started to grow and grow and grow, and that feeling of being inconvenienced or losing out has been replaced with this feeling of, oh my gosh, there's people in circumstances and situations that are so much more burdensome than what I'm facing. And there's things that I don't even think of. You know, a friend of mine pointed out that, you know, this recommendation for everybody to isolate themselves and to get social distancing is particularly difficult for children who rely on school lunches, for example, or for people that are in home situations where there's maybe domestic violence, or people that don't feel safe at home for whatever reason. And as I started to just become more aware on a content level, it felt like my whole heart just started to expand, and my brain shifted from what can I do to make this easier on me to what can I do to make this easier on people, other people. And, you know, my son, my 16-year-old daughter is in Seattle right now because they went on a trip like 2 weeks ago when we thought, well, this isn't that big of a deal. And so now they are quarantined in Seattle, which actually all the teenagers are quite happy about because they get to stay home and play video games together, and that's like a dream come true for them. So they're not having a hard time. But what I'm noticing is there's this deep feeling of, you know, appreciation and gratitude, and also this strong sort of urgent longing to do something. Mm-hmm. Because I am one of the privileged people who, even though, you know, it's certainly going to financially cost me, at the end of the day, I'm not going to end up, you know, unable to survive or unable to pay my bills or any of those type of situations. And so there's this feeling that I want to do something, but I don't know what. And then there's this other voice that comes in that says, maybe the thing to do is to just take care of yourself right now. And maybe it's okay to just do that and to just focus on getting still and quiet and waiting. If there is more to do, it will be revealed. All you have to do is to keep showing up and taking care of yourself. So that's what I'm noticing.
Yes, well, and it's so big, isn't it, Autumn, because you're pointing to to the shift that happens for us when we step out of the ego, right? Because when I'm in that place where it's all self-referenced, where the self is the ego, then it's all about me. I get irritated, mm-hmm. I'm inconvenienced. That you experience the identification with the thwarting of the I. And mm-hmm. then we have things in our environment that slowly teach us how to turn our attention to more than just that self-absorption, right? That it speaks to your heart and allows you to identify with your authentic nature, which is love, right?
Yeah.
That when I'm in that ego place, all I experience is negativity and irritation and inconvenience and bother and all of that. And then my attention shifts to, well, those children who are not going to eat because they're not going to be able to come to school. And you can watch how that ego melts and the heart opens because the attention shifts from, wow, there's so much more in life than that really small me place. And it's grace almost that allows us to make that shift, to recognize our privilege, to be grateful for what we have, to be able to realize the impact that it has on other people, and then move to that place where you're talking about, which is, wow, how can I give? Because I'm in a place where I have so much. What is it that I can do to assist? And you're right. When we sit quietly, it will be revealed what is there to do next. But we have to be in that place of disidentification from, oh my God, what does this mean for me? To, oh wow, I'm filled with love for everybody who is being impacted in more ways than I can even imagine. And so then from that place of love and gratitude for what you have, it's actually possible to give and wait to be told how you can give. And that's a movement we go through a lot. I mean, that's the basic movement of practice, the noticing of the egocentricity and being open to how I can move from that to an awareness of all, and from that awareness of all, how does life want to use me to do life's work?
Yeah, and what I notice as you're describing that process is that there's something distinctly different about this experience of wanting to support, help, love, give, around this particular crisis versus, that's an experience that I'm familiar with, but in the past, it comes more from a place of a desperate need to disprove my inherent unworthiness than it does from a genuine, oh, loving and caring for people feels really fulfilling to me.
Yeah.
And
it's beautiful. That's beautifully stated.
Yeah.
It's beautifully stated because the it's what we say, right, that sometimes when the process that you're describing of giving from deprivation versus mm-hmm. giving from fulfillment, right? Because mm-hmm. in that giving from deprivation place, it's still all about me. I'm doing this
right.
because I want to feel better, not mm-hmm. I'm doing this from that place of being identified with true gratitude and love, from which giving is an act of life, not an act of ego. And it's truly
right.
completely different.
Yeah, it's interesting to be for me to notice the, you know, the maybe what began as a subtle nuance difference to now feeling like, oh, it's a very dramatic shift, and it's really easy to tell when I'm coming from which place. Because one of them is I have to prove that I'm a good person and I'm worth taking up space in the world by doing good deeds so other people will look at me in a particular way and so I can earn my right to be here. And there's that feels very exhausting. That feels
oh,
very
God,
life
yes.
draining. But this yes. other place of, well, let me sit still and see what drops in as the sort of guidance for what is the next thing to do feels energizing and life-giving yes. and affirming. And it's really interesting for me to notice, in a lot of ways, what feels like for the first time, how dramatically different those two experiences are. And it could be said that they end with the same result, but I don't feel like they do end with the same result at all. Even though the physical act of giving or doing for another person from the outside might look like the same thing, at the end of that experience, the net, what the result does feel completely different.
Absolutely. And that's why we say it's not what but how, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because as
mm-hmm.
you're pointing out, the action might be the same. The action that I take might be in service of someone else. But the fruit of that action and how I did it it's completely different, because how I feel at the end of it is one of two things, either energized and with life
mm-hmm.
or deprived and not energized, because all the life force went to feed the ego. It was a karmic act. Not a selfless one, right?
Right?
It was one feeds the ego. That's the result. And the ego gets stronger and it feels awful. The other is giving life back to life, and that's very energizing. I think they, you know, it's a thing that we say when you give love, there's just more love. Love is an infinite
mm-hmm.
source. It's not a depletion mm-hmm. at all when you give from that place.
Mm.
But when you give from a lack of love, a give from, okay, I don't feel loved, I'm not enough, I need to earn it, I need to get approval, that's an ego place that's feeding ego. It's feeding the hungry ghost, and it never feels fulfilling because it can't be fed. It's not a place of love. And you can
yeah.
tell the difference. It's dramatically different.
Yeah.
And it's so important to realize that it does feel different. And that is something we learn from, right?
Yeah.
You can't force it. I don't know if that's been your experience as well, that
yeah.
when you felt inconvenienced, there was something in your awareness that pointed you to a wider sense of awareness that moved you to your heart. So
mm-hmm.
you didn't go, okay, well, I'm selfish and I shouldn't think that way, and therefore I need to open my heart to people. That's not how it happened.
Right. Right, but I think I spent years believing that if I just chastised and condemned myself enough, it would work that way.
Yeah, or if you believe something chastising you and condemning you, it's what we talk
right.
about all the time. We're brainwashed into believing that punishment makes us good people.
Right, right.
Awareness puts us in touch with our goodness. Right, which is a different
mm-hmm.
process than being browbeaten into saying that you're inadequate and you have to prove your worth.
Right. Yeah, and so I feel like as a result of this experience, like there's this sort of marveling at, I think another caller had spoken to this experience as well, this marveling at, wow, I cannot get caught up in panic and fear and stress right now. And that feels, you know, so distinctly different than, you know, if this particular situation had happened, you know, a few years ago, I would have. And so I can have compassion because I know how easy it is to do. And
mm-hmm.
I can just be grateful that I have a practice that supports me in not getting caught up in it right now.
Yeah. It's such gratitude. I think that's what we're all echoing, right? Because
we've been there. We know we would have done that. Now we're not doing it. And there's such a level of gratitude for that transformation and what brought about that transformation, so you can have the experience you're having, which is, I'm in touch with the authenticity in me that flowers in goodness and giving.
Yeah.
And to recognize that that's what we are is a true gift, right, Autumn? Because what you've mm-hmm. been told you are is inadequate and having to prove yourself, and to come face to face with what it is you truly are is such a gift.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are no words to express that.
Right. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Bob.
Bob.
Hey. Well, really grateful for this opportunity, and really it's great to just be listening to everyone, looking at all the things I'm looking at the moment. And really recognizing, as I've kind of gently kind of gone about the world out there, just feeling a lot of gratitude, just knowing that most people just don't have this in their life or something that looks like it, and just really feeling a lot of compassion for those people.
How would we survive without it?
Exactly. And one of the things I've been looking at that was touched on by earlier as well is that place of, you know, kind of resting in the I don't know. What I've been seeing a lot about it is that when I'm in the other place of either I need to know this thing or I should know this thing, that is actually what cuts off the intelligence of life. You know, it mm-hmm. provides this big okay to go unconscious when mm-hmm. I'm in that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that we're in touch with the really I don't know that the situation brings, and there's a sharp ability to see the difference between the resting in the I don't know from a centered place and in the I should know or I need to know, which actually is a way of cutting off our connection to the intelligence that tells us what we need to know now, right? Because the conditioned mm-hmm. sense, I project that's what you're pointing to, the conditioned sense is referencing a blanket of knowledge that may or may not be relevant to the moment. It's kind of abstract. But the I don't know actually has information that's relevant to the moment if we're paying attention to it. It may not tell us what's going to happen 3 months from now or any of those things, but there's a knowing in the moment that is the only knowing we can actually have.
Yeah, and it's actually my experience that in the moment, what drops in actually turns out to be really practical, you know, with some piece of content I was looking at where, like, you know, I was just posed with this question and it's like, I don't know. And I could see that I was like this pull to like, well, let's sit with it and kind of figure it out. Right, which is actually not sitting with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what ends up dropping in is not an answer to the content question, but to the process, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
oh gosh, yeah.
So what actually dropped in is like, oh, you can actually ask someone else. You could reach out for help. You could look it up. There's all these sorts of possibilities that drop in that don't really address the content, but it's like, well, this is actually what is the next kind of process step in this.
Yeah. Yeah, what you're pointing to is very nuanced, right, Bob? Because because the conditioned orientation is I ask a question and I should receive an answer to the question. And it mm-hmm. misses the fact that the question may not be relevant and therefore the answer is not relevant either. So if you ask the question like, how long is the virus going to last? The answer is, I don't know. But there's a way in which, as you said, if I'm sitting in the process of holding a question that's not a content question, then I get a process answer, which is very practical, which is, okay, well, what is really being pointed at is this piece of information is unknown and needs to be resolved. I'm not going to resolve it for you, but I can give you a step, like ask someone or look it up.
as the next step in what can be answered. And the only answer you got is what the next step is, not the answer to the content question. And we really have to be present to know that when we inquire with light that way, that's what we receive. Practical and direct and relevant to now.
Yeah, that's all great. And what's kind of helpful in sort of like this, the kind of nature of what's going on right now in the world is that the best I can tell, nobody knows. You know, like there are recommendations, there's guidance, there's, you know, all the confusion and misinformation and all that. But like, what's really clear is that nobody really knows. And so, you know, to instead be in the, you know, attending to the process, attending to I don't know, attending to presence, that seems like the most, you know, for me at this moment, that's where to place my attention.
Mm-hmm. Yes, when it's very clear that no one knows, then the intelligent thing is to just pay attention to the moment where you have the information you need for now.
Yeah. And also, once back to gratitude, because I can also see how without something like this practice, where that could also lead to more confusion and panic and worry.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, for me, it's like because I have this support, it provides a lot of clarity and a lot of, willingness just to continue just getting back here over and over again.
Yeah. That if I was in that without a practice, I'm in the confusion. With a practice, I have the ability to be clear and to work with I don't know, not think that I don't know something wrong and somehow I have to manufacture some knowledge in order to make myself feel better, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob. We have time for one more person. It's short.
This is Carolyn.
Carolyn.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm struck by the difference in the way I think of it as like the external structure and the internal structure of practice,
mm-hmm.
and the rigidity and conditionality of ego projecting how things need to be externally, as contrasted to the fluidity and the adaptability of an internal practice structure.
Mm. Yes, say more.
Well, I've just been looking at that in our training, we're practicing, we're building something, but it's not a rigid construction. It's we're building faith and trust and loving kindness, and that is not a rigid conditional I'm going to be okay if things look a certain way.
And
how grateful I am that it is structured in that way, that it is such a clear reflection of life expressing itself. My heart is so filled with there is a, you know, an external way of looking at social isolation, and we're not together, but I've never felt so connected.
Yes, because that's such a beautiful...
we're together in a way that's different than ego would say we have to be.
Yes, that's the only way to be. You cannot, exactly. And I think that's a good example of what you're pointing to, which is, all right, what we're not training for is absolutes, right? We're training for is, as you said, being present to the structure of life as it represents itself in the moment. And since by nature life is fluid, then we're training in the fluidity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
And
because
be
it allows
to,
us... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, it allows us to be together in ways, as you said, that ego says, you know, that we're not together the way ego says we should be together. We're together in the way it's possible to be together in life right now.
Yes. And so everything, the willingness to show up and do things in a new way and try different things, and it's so much fun.
It is. Yes,
you know,
we're not so trapped and so limited to the only way we do group is to show up at 10 o'clock in this particular space.
Yeah.
I mean, if we can't, the freedom lies in being able to do it regardless of the structure that's indicated, right?
Yeah.
Because that's freedom.
Yeah.
And
I'm sorry?
It does take us, we realize how much we're trapped by the rigidity when we're thwarted or when the opportunity to be different shows up, right?
Yes.
And then there's the willingness and courage to move with what is appropriate to the moment rather than having to feel resentful or unhappy or out of control when the original structure cannot be manifest.
Yes, yes. And in that, it's that saying yes to being fully alive, whatever that.
Yes. saying yes to feeling fully alive, however that is. Yes, exactly.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. And we'll keep everyone posted for whether we're going to do this again on Thursday or whether there'll be group at center. Probably do this again on Thursday night. So I will send an email around. Thank you, everybody. Take good care.